Hello, everyone.
Great. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming back this week. We started on chapter 3 of Ta'anit last time, chapter 3 of 4, so actually we're making very good progress. This is the part of Ta'anit which sort of opens up from specifically droughts into all sorts of other kinds of disasters that one might fast for. I just want to remind us of this core ambiguity that runs through this chapter, which is basically what kind of difference there is between fasting and blasting, doing the shofar blast, the matri'in versus the mit'anin, fasting versus shofar blasts, or again, the ambiguity of shofar blasts that could also mean just shouting with your voice, matri'in. For example, by the way, hariyu, in one of the Psalms in Kabbalat Shabbat. That's about singing, not about shofar blasts. One possible reading of it is that matri'in is just code word for the jumping to the highest level of fast, which includes the shofar blast. If you remember the early stages of the fast, the first three and the second three, they don't involve any shofar. But after you get to the last seven, you start to have a shofar involved. So it could be that when it says to matri'in that they blast, that's a code word for saying they jump directly to the most severe level of fast. They jump directly to the last seven and ignore the slow ramp up with the two sets of three. But it could also be more limited in meaning. It might mean just literally blow the shofar without any fasting associated with it at all. Or it might mean to shout more generally. This ambiguity is going to come up several times, and it may not mean the same thing in all places. It may be that in this first Mishnah that we looked at last time, because of the way the Mishnah talks about it as they blast immediately, matri'in aleihem miyad, it sounds like that's a jump to a higher level, and that makes us think that matri'in means to jump to the highest level of the fasts, and not just blast a shofar without any fast at all. So maybe here it means that, but later on it will mean something else. We'll have to see and make a call. Let's move to Mishnah 3, which is where we got to. We talked about how the wrong kind of rain comes along, then you might jump to the highest level of fast. You might go straight to the shofar blasts. Now, we're also going to talk about now a difference in locale. These situations where some towns are fasting and some towns are not. Some towns are blowing the shofar, some towns are not. Or the surrounding area of towns might be different from the town itself, or there might be such things which are so bad that the entire country goes into fasting mode straight away or something like that. So we're going to see a bunch of those kind of distinctions. V'chein ir shelo yardu alei geshamim. So too a town which fell upon it, which no rain has fallen upon it. One of the things, right, that ir in modern Hebrew means city, but in Mishnaic Hebrew it means town. It's like a rural town with a town square and a synagogue and stuff, but basically pretty rural, with surrounded by fields. Dichtiv, and here we have a verse from Amos. V'imtarti al ir echat, v'al ir achat lo amtir, chelka achat timater. This is the situation where Amos... Actually, I'm going to bring up the verse. Yeah. So this is Amos, the prophet Amos. He is, one would say, fiery. He calls the corrupt people of the northern kingdom of Israel Parot HaBashan, the cows of Bashan. He goes through and tells them what terrible things God has done for them, and yet they still haven't paid any attention. So, for example, V'gam ani natati lechem nikayon shinayim b'chol areichem. I gave you in all of your towns a cleanness of teeth. In other words, you've eaten nothing. I've given you a famine, b'chosar lechem, a lack of food in all of your places, and still, v'lo shavtem adai nul madonai. You never actually returned to God. Like, I gave you all the warning signs. You never came back to me. I also withdrew the rain from you. I withheld the rain so it wouldn't rain during harvest time, and still you didn't pay any attention to my warnings. You didn't come back to me, God. And that's the context here. I will make it rain in one town and not another, one field, not another field. And all of this, like, this is maybe a sort of miraculous event in that way, where God is able to define the rain so much that God can make one town rain, but the neighboring town not at all. And even though you saw this miraculous sign, you still didn't listen and came back to God. So this really interfaces with the kind of attitude we saw earlier between God and rain and Israel, this land of Israel, this very close knit relationship, that God has control of the rain and uses it as a tool to punish and reward. And we'll see that come up later as well, by the by. Okay, but now that Amos has given the situation where God might make it rain on one town but not another, we want to know what the procedure is for that situation. The procedure is, Ota ha'ir mit ana umit ra'at, v'chol zbivoteha mit anot v'lo matriot. The town itself fasts and blows the shofar, but all of its surroundings, the various tiny settlements or farmhouses around the town, mit anot v'lo matriot, they fast but don't blow the shofar. So they sort of participate in the town's suffering, but they don't blow the shofar. That is not so alarming. Rabbi Kiva omer, matriot v'lo mit anot. But Rabbi Kiva has the opposite view, and he's going to have this view in a second as well. He thinks that the surrounding towns should blow the shofar, but not fast. What's at stake in this debate? I think what they're trying to think about is which of these two activities is more emblematic of crying out to God for help. Is it fasting or is it blowing the shofar? Which one would the surrounding areas like be most participating in the suffering of the town? Would they be participating in it if they were blowing the shofar or fasting? Another thing about the fasting here, by the way, is that it might be if there is a lack of food in the town, you might want a whole area around the town to fast just as a resource management tactic. You might want them to fast in order that they don't take the last food supplies for the town. So that might also be what's going on in the first opinion, whereas Rabbi Kiva maybe thinks it's more about the ritual joining in. And as I said before, not totally clear what matriot means here to mitanot. It seems to me that now that we are dealing with these things as totally separable things. There's fast and then there's blowing the shofar, and you might have one without the other, either way, especially according to Rabbi Kiva. So we've had droughts throughout Israel. We've had droughts in one town, but not other towns. Now we're going to open the conversation up to other disasters. B'chein ir sheyishba dever o mapolet. Two other disasters, a plague or a rubble. Mapolet literally means rubble, but that means here essentially an earthquake. An earthquake has caused the buildings to fall. Ota ha'ir mit ana umitrat, v'chol svivoteha mit anot v'lo matriot. Again, the same procedure as the town where it didn't rain there, but did rain elsewhere. This is another sort of localized phenomenon. If there's a dever in this one town, a plague in this one town, or an earthquake just in this local area, then, or buildings collapse for other reasons, it might not necessarily be earthquake. Then you do a fast and you blow the shofar in that town, but the surrounding areas, they fast but don't blow the shofar, unless you're Rabbi Kiva, in which case, again, he thinks the opposite. Rabbi Kiva on there, matriot v'lo mitanot, the surrounding towns blow the shofar, but they don't fast. Another thing about blowing the shofar here, and we'll see this come up later, is it's not totally obvious whether blowing the shofar is a ritual part of the fast, just that has ritual meaning, or is literally an alarm system, just literally trying to, a siren, essentially trying to alert people to the danger or to the current situation. And it might be both, and that might be fine, but here it's not totally obvious, and I think that might change how you read the majority Rabbi Akiva debates in these two Mishnayot. Okay, now we want to define what kind of dever that we're talking about. Ezehu dever. When you see a question like this in the Mishnah, what it does not mean at all is what is the definition of dever? What is the definition of a plague? That's not what it means. What it means is what is the definition of a plague such that this law would apply to it? Such that that town would fast and blow the shofar, and the surrounding areas would either blow the shofar or fast, but not both. It doesn't mean what is a plague in general, because you assume, like, dever is a word that people use, people know what it means. It's not trying to define what words mean, it's trying to define the legal definition of when a word fits into this legal category. And you see this a lot in the Mishnah. It's rarely asking for definitions. And the definition for the legal definition for the dever here, it's such that this legal procedure would be carried out, is ir hamotziyah hamesh me'ot ragli v'yatzu mimena shlosha meitim b'shlosha yamim zeh har zeh, hari zeh dever, v'chot mikan ein zeh dever. So it's a town that has a town which has 500 foot soldiers, fighting men, essentially, like a town that can produce 500, sorry, people for the army. And three people die on three consecutive days. Three people die on day one, three people die on day two, three people die on day three. Minimally, that becomes a dever. So it's a sort of essentially trying to give you a percentage, a loose percentage, right? A town which can give you roughly 500 fighting men, a town where there are, and in that town, there are three people who die every day. And if that persists for 3 days, that's a dever that for which this legal procedure will be carried out. Reading this Mishnah in this circumstance was a bit hard hitting. This feels like the charts that we're making all the time and seeing all the time. But yeah, they had to contend with that. And if it were anything less than that, if it were two people for 3 days, or it were three people the first day, three people day two, and then two people day three, that would not be a dever that you'd have to fast about. It'd just be a regular run of the mill dever for which no fast is required. Now we're moving on to the kinds of disasters which affect everyone and are not localized, and therefore may apply to everyone in a locale. Al elu matri'in b'chol makom. About these, they blast, make a blast in every single place, throughout the land of Israel. Not obvious what the blasting is here. Does it also include fasting, or does it more like mean somebody goes around with a siren, goes from town to town, making sure that everybody knows that there's some disaster on the horizon? These are the things these are the things that you have to do it for. Al hashidafon v'al hayirakon, al ha'arbe v'al hechasil, v'al hayara'av, al hacherev, matri'in aleha mipnei shi makam halechet. The things you need to worry about is the shidafon, which is this kind of blight, where the crops start to dry out. Yerakon, which is from the word yarak, to turn green or yellow. Get the opposite of shidafon in some sense. It's the plants become too moist and they start dying. On arbe and hasil, these are different kinds of locusts at different stages in their development. If you remember way back when we started this, we saw the book of Yoel. He had a whole set of different kinds of locusts, including arbe and hasil. That's where that comes from. Al ha'chaya ra'av al ha'chariv, this is the wild animals, or sword. Not obvious what it means by the sword. Maybe there's a wandering army or something like that. These, you matri'in aleha, you blow the shofar immediately, or not immediately, but you blow the shofar about them. Bipneji makem halechet, they are a literally a walking plague. These are non-localized phenomena. Like once you see a shidafon in one place, you can assume that sooner or later shidafon will spread throughout Eretz Israel. So too with like a wandering army or a wild beast, you're never going to be sure that it's going to remain in that locale. It might go out. Are there no cognizable plagues in small towns? So the previous Mishnah is about a dever. It seems to be a more localized plague and therefore might not spread to other places, and therefore you can localize the fast in the area. And it might be that there's an even smaller town, like a little hamlet, a village hamlet or something, where there just wouldn't be enough people in order to start a fast, but it might still be a dever and it might remain there, and that would be fine too. I just wanted to point out that one of the things that people say about the Mishnah is that it very rarely quotes Tanakh. That is true, and also less true than people make it out to be. It also often references Tanakh, even if it doesn't quote it. And this is actually a reference to a verse in Tanakh. If you look over here, this is in Parashah in a few weeks' time. The curses, if you do all of these things, then everything will be great for you. And if you don't do any of these things, then you'll be in serious trouble. In the blessing part, it talks about one of the main blessings is rain in the right time. Benatati gishmechem beitam. And it says here, Benatati shalom ba'aretz ushchavtem ve'ein machrid. The vicious beasts won't bother you. I'll give a rest from the land, for the wild beasts, and the sword will not cross over your land. So again, this is similar to the Amos thing. The Mishnah is telling us is telling us unsubtly and not so subtly that all of these things are divine punishments, all of these plagues, and so fasting is just trying to way to reverse the divine decree in these scenarios. Now, two interesting stories. Ma'aseh sheyardu zakenim mirushalayim la'arehem v'gazru tanit al shenir'a kimlo fitanor shidafon ba'ashkelon. This is now sort of giving you the bounds of how small an amount one has to see shidafon in order for the whole country to shut down. I meant to say this as well. The numbers for the dever, what to find the dever for fasting, seems to me are extremely small. Okay, the town itself might be relatively large in order to have 500 men for the army, but three dying for 3 days, that's a very small amount. That's 9 people out of a town of presumably at least, you know, several thousand. So this is a very small amount to include a dever. Similarly, you'll see here for the shidafon, a very small amount of shidafon sets the entire fasting thing into motion. So it happened that the elders went back home from Jerusalem to their towns. Not exactly obvious what they were doing in Jerusalem in the first place. Maybe they were there for some kind of meeting. Maybe they were there for Sukkot or some other pilgrimage festival, Pesach. Yep, but nonetheless, they were in Jerusalem, they went home, and they then decreed a tanit al shenir akim lo fitanor shidafon bashkelon. Just a tiny bit of, just because they saw a amount of shidafon in Ashkelon, in one place, amount of blight, which was just a tiny mouth of an oven. Pretty small amount of grain their ovens were quite large, firstly. So it is not a particularly small amount of grain compared to a person, but it's a very small amount of grain compared to the grain in Eretz Israel. So this is a very low level. Once you see that amount, it's implying that you should start decreeing a fast. Who has the power to decree fasts is an interesting question, and it kind of depends on what you think zakenim means here. There are a bunch of options, one of which is elders of the town, sort of town officials in some way. Could be as well, zakenim might be a way of referring to shul officials, to shul offices, people who run the shuls. And it can also be a way to refer to sages, i.e. rabbis specifically. So it's hard to know exactly who is being is decreeing the fast here, who is in charge of this. Depends on who you read and who you trust, how you're going to read the word zakenim here. My instinct, just so you know, is I think it seems to me that basically the synagogue structure would have been the one in charge of decreeing these kind of fasts. Synagogue structure, which was separate from the rabbinic structure. The shuls did not have rabbis in those days. Who would have thought? And yes, what were they thinking would happen as a result of the fast? Yes, exactly. God would reverse the decree. The point is to get God's attention and to show that you have changed your ways, as we saw it earlier in chapter 2, show that you have changed your actions. But I just want to say that there's also a practical aspect of this, which is that a lot of these are food shortages. And in a food shortage, you want people to be eating as little as possible. So it might be that you would come up with the drought, regardless of any theological claims. You might come up with fasting as a response to droughts, just in order to save food. Now, let's talk about this in a second, Judith. That's good. So the second story here is about the wild animals. V'od gazru tanit al she'achlu ze'evim shnei tinokot be'eve ha'yardein. There were two wolves, there were wolves. My mistake. There were wolves. We don't know how many wolves. Could be a bunch of wolves that ate two children across the Jordan. And just for that tiny amount, and that was across the Jordan, not even in Eretz Israel. Just because of that, they decreed a fast over the entire land. And Rabbi Yossi takes that even further. Rabbi Yossi and their losh al she'achlu al shenira. They didn't even eat anything. They didn't kill a single person. What they did was they just saw a bunch of wolves, a pack of wolves over the Jordan, and just for that, they decreed a fast over the entire land. So what's the point of this fast? Yes, the children are not going to come back to life, but the point is to prevent the wolves spreading throughout. What we just said is that wild animals are a makam halechet. They're a plague which are non-localized. They start in one place, but then the wild animals get everywhere and they cause more damage. So what we're saying here is, even though the damage they have done so far is tiny, they're not even in Eretz Israel, they're still across the Jordan. Even so, you're being cautious because they may go throughout the land and may cause more trouble in the future. So that's what you're hoping God will reverse the decree of the animals coming into the land of Eretz Israel and eating more people. How is fasting a sign that one has done tshuva? Exactly right. So if you look back at the end of, the beginning of chapter 2, you will see that is exactly the point, which is that the elder of the shul, one of the elders of the shul, makes sure that everyone understands that the fasting is only the first step. You need to also change your deeds. That's why I want to say, Sarah, as well, there's also a practical resource management question at hand. These things go far hand in hand. Similarly to the shofar, the way it's sort of like, it's a practical thing in the sense that it warns people that, that disaster is around. And also it's a ritual item that has ritual significance. So too fasting. It's a resource management and also a ritual. I also want to say that one of the things I said in the introduction to this masechet is that it's really hard for us to understand what how fasting meant for them. Like, fasting for us is very rare, for them, extremely common. It's a very common response throughout human history by all humans. So it's hard for us to imagine because we're actually just on the other side of that in a way that doesn't really resonate with us anymore. But it would be very intuitive that fasting would work for most of humanity, for most of human history. Yeah, and what we can't live without, stripping down to the bare minimum, right, reminds us of what is important. Yeah, that's one of the things about Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur, you're supposed to be like, just be as yourself without any accoutrement, without any artifice. You know, so that's like what's the thing about not having makeup or not wearing fancy shoes. It's just like, no, it's just me. It's not anything else. I'm not pretending to be anybody else. I'm just being me. I'm stripping down to who I am. And that's how I want to approach God. That's definitely a part of this as well. So this is just sort of giving you the floor of how small an impact a thing has to have in order for these plagues that we're worried will spread, especially for the entire land of Israel to go into fasting mode or just blowing the shofar mode. It's not totally clear, as we said. Okay, let's finish with this Mishnah and then we'll leave something great for next time. Though we'll probably come back to this because this has a few complex issues that are more complex than the words seem like. Al ilu matri'in b'shabbat. Now we learn that by default, you shouldn't start a fast or shouldn't blow the shofar on Shabbat. But these are the things which are exceptions. These are the things which you would sound the blast even on Shabbat. Al ir shehikifua goyim o nahar. Al hasafina hamitarefet bayam. Here are two things. About three things, about a city or a town which is surrounded by a non-Jewish army. They're besieged. Hikifu has a way of talking about being besieged by an army. Or Nahar, or the river sort of bursting its banks and threatening to flood a town. And also Al Hasfina Hamitarefet Bayam, or a ship which is drowning in the sea. These are emergencies. These are things that you have to deal with right there and then. There's no way to wait. Therefore, it overrides Shabbat. Most of these other things, okay, so there's a dever. Like, the dever is not going to be so much worse on Sunday than it was on Saturday, such that you can, you know, declare a fast on the Sunday for the Monday afterwards. Like, that's fine. But some things are so urgent that you have to do to it even on Shabbat, and that's what this, these are some examples of that. Rabbi Yossi Amar La Ezra V'lo Litzaka. Rabbi Yossi says, actually, this is not the ritual shofar blasts. This is La Ezra, for help. The point is, you sound a shofar blast in order to get people to help the sinking ship or the town surrounded by an invading army or a river that's about to burst its banks. The point is to get people to help, not necessarily a ritual response to disaster. Different kind of shofar blast. Shimon HaTimani Omer Af Al HaDever. Shimon HaTimani thinks that you also blow the shofar on Shabbat for a dever, but the Lord HaHodu Lo Chachamim, the Chachamim didn't agree. Probably for the reason that I just said a second ago, which is that how much worse is it going to be on Sunday versus Saturday? Not such a big deal. Okay, so we're going to come back to this because there's actually some more interesting things going on. I'm just going to look at the chat for a second. Yeah, have you ever noticed how people dress in Yom Kippur? Yes, and you shouldn't do that. 100%. I really struggle with the whole fasting thing. While it's gotten easier as I age, I still find myself thinking only about breaking the fast. I only fast on Yom Kippur. All the work I'm supposed to do is overtaken by my hunger. Really struggle to find the right approach. Yeah, I find Yom Kippur is the easiest fast by far because there's a set of things that you're supposed to do that covers the entire day. And there's no time where you're just like sitting around thinking about other things because you're so busy at shul. So I find Yom Kippur is by far the easiest fast for that reason. But yeah, fasting is hard, and it's hard when you're not used to it as well. One of the things about people being more used to fasting in ancient times is because they were also just more malnourished more of the time. And we're less malnourished. So it's harder for us to imagine that. I find that all the time I would spend eating on a regular day is time for reflecting during a fast. Yeah, the amount of time you suddenly gain on Tisha B'Av, for example, the amount of time you gain just by not having to prepare or eat meals is really kind of amazing. Like, you're obviously less effective during that time, but you really feel how much of your time is wasted on, or wasted, quote unquote wasted, on the physical aspects of life. I think that's part of the fasting deal as well. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll go over this Mishnah with a couple of interesting addendums. And then we're going to go on to Choni, who I'm sure everyone is excited about.